On today's episode of The Good Word, Ice Young joins us to discuss Joel Embiid being suspended for shoving a reporter. The 2019 draft class is taking a leap with one exception, and Draymond Green continues or pauses his rivalry with Jordan Poole. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. It is Ice Wednesday. We are joined today by Ice Young, as we are each and every Wednesday. I'm going to assume that if you all are here today, you are here because you want to hear a basketball podcast. So we are going to do our best to deliver it to you. Ice, all things aside, how you doing today?
I'm excited to talk about basketball. I'm good. I just got back from vacation. I went to Jamaica for 4 days. So that was nice. It was a bit rainy, but when it wasn't, it was beautiful and sunny, good food. I started the Spades table. I take a lot of pride in going on vacation and starting the Spades table. So honestly, my mindset is there and not currently here, but I'm currently here with you talking about basketball.
I mean, look. You, when you talk about Spades, you're speaking my language. You know what I mean? You are speaking my language. All I ask is that nobody underbids. I had a very famous Spades game with Michael Smith, Bomani Jones, Jamel Hill, and I think Anthony Anderson, the comedian, actor, was not too far behind. And Michael Smith decided to underbid, for which I will never forgive him, because he was like, bored.
Nah,
we wound up having like a hand of seven. We wound up having like a hand of seven. He was like bored.
Nah, we count sandbags here where I'm from in Jersey. So that's you're going to get reprimanded if you decide to underbid. Like, no, you got to risk. You got to have some risk here.
Scared money don't make money, and that could be said for a lot of different things. Now, to the basketball, Ice, we're going to start with some of the news of the day. The NBA suspended Joel Embiid 3 games for shoving a reporter in the locker room. Marcus Hayes, if you didn't hear Monday's show with Amin Al-Hassan, we went into detail with that in a bunch of different directions. Go back and listen to that. But Ice, I'm curious from the athlete's point of view, and also someone who talks to athletes about the rigors of media training and everything else. What was your perspective on all of that?
Yeah, I think, it's a line that's crossed, you know, whether you're the athlete and you're shoving or you're the reporter getting shoved, like there's a line crossed. I think we can speak and we can talk almost all day, right? And even that, to some degree, lines can get crossed. But I think, yeah, anytime you make it physical, and it doesn't help when you're the size of a Joel Embiid, right? It's not me pushing you, and I'm 5'7", and you're probably not going to take more than 2 steps back. Like, this is a large human being. I think there's going to be reprimand. I did like the suspension, though. I feel like 3 games is fair. I feel like it's fair. I feel like it's timely in terms of that when he comes back to return, the NBA Cup will be starting. And so you try to win the in-season tournament. But I think we going into this, like, Embiid knew there was going to be consequences. He knew he was going to be reprimanded, and he didn't care. He felt that they were not going to outweigh him standing up for his family and telling this reporter, like, hey, you took it too far. So I think in my perspective, what the NBA did is fair. It brings up the question, though, like, not to say what was written wasn't fair, or maybe nice, because we don't write things to be nice. But it begs the question, like, in order to improve this relationship with athletes in the media, there's got to be some accountability on the media side. And I'm not saying that this applies to this situation. Like, yes, that this person should be penalized for this. But we've talked before about, like, Christine Brennan and what was said to Dejounte Carrington about Caitlin Clark and kind of crossing a line with questioning. And it just makes me think from the athlete perspective, like, athletes are always being held accountable for every single thing. I think they want the same from the media. And so I think that's why some of these situations are escalating this way, and you're having some of these uncomfortable conversations, is because I think athletes want accountability from the media. And I don't know how you get that. I don't know how that's generated other than I'm saying I'm going to do a good job and have integrity doing my job. I don't know. That was my thought.
Accountability amongst the media is an interesting concept. Like, people can ask for it, but they don't know exactly what they want. They don't know exactly what it looks like. Yeah. We have bosses that we have to answer to. And before things go to print, by and large, it is vetted. It should be vetted and edited and looked at by someone who has dominion over at least our job performance. So it's not just we're tweeting and putting it out to the world. If you're writing, you know, if you're writing, that's one thing. If you're at a press conference and asking questions, that's another. I think accountability is exactly what Marcus Hayes did. He showed up the next day.
Yep.
And if you write something that someone does not like, whether it's a column, whether it's analysis, whether it's straight reporting, you show up the next day and you face the music. And it's not about, sometimes, put it like this, sometimes if you're writing something that's false, then there should be accountability there. If you're writing something that somebody don't like, that's just the world we live in. That's unfortunately, that's the world that we live in. Everybody has a microphone. Everybody has a voice. Everybody has a say. I think what has happened is there's a level of civility. There used to be a symbiotic relationship between players and media, especially as the NBA was growing. When the NBA was growing in the 1980s, when it was getting off of tape delay and everything else, the NBA and its players understood that more access to the media meant that you brought the players closer to the common fan, which grew the league. Even if it were negative coverage, even if it were salacious, it was all part and parcel with the end game of growing. David Stern was a master of that. He was a master of spin. He was a master of attention. Now, because the NBA has grown so large, I'm not sure how much more domestically it can grow. You've got the new TV deals and you have this huge gulf in between what players made back then and what they make now. Sometimes people don't want to be held accountable in the locker room. The one thing you can say about Joel Embiid, and my friend Bomani Jones, a friend of the show, made this point on his show on Monday. Bo said Joel Embiid has brought his family into the lexicon by mentioning his brother and his son and saying, I'm doing this for them. And when you bring in your family, when you brand your family, when you brand someone and bring them in as part of your story, willingly bring them in as part of your story, it almost makes them to some degree, I won't say fair game is not the right word you're going to say, but it's not a sniper
not like-
shot.
It wasn't like they introduced it, right? It's not like they introduced it and put this out of thin air. Absolutely. I can understand that.
And the other part of this is, granted, I have a younger brother and an older sister. And if I lost one of them, God forbid, and someone just used their name in anything, if it was anything less than flattering in reference to me or them, I'm probably going to be hopping mad. Yeah. Marcus Hayes did not use them in a derogatory way. He poorly referenced them as a device that he did not have to use them as a device in the column. That's why I think by and large, there was supposed to be a meeting between the Philadelphia 76ers and Joel Embiid and Marcus Hayes. And usually that happens behind closed doors. Some level of miscommunication happened, Ice, between all of those parties, where Joel Embiid was sitting there waiting in the locker room. Maybe he didn't know that there was supposed to be some meeting of the minds between he and Marcus Hayes, and he decided to go Batman, vigilante justice. He was going to have his say one way or the other, and it crossed the line. Now for the suspension before we move on. Things tend to go like this, Ice. The NBA probably won in 5 games. To prevent something going to arbitration with the NBA Players Association, you say, you know what? 3 games is a nice number that's going to prevent this from getting public and getting ugly, because nobody wants this to get ugly. And because it's nice and convenient, Ice, that this suspension ends. But we were never sure when Joel Embiid was actually going to play, right? Because we didn't know when he was doing 5-on-5 or he just started doing 5-on-5. It conveniently ends on the day of the NBA Cup, which, of course, the NBA is doing its best to promote, to incentivize the regular season even more. That's when Joel Embiid will be eligible to play. Because usually it means if you're suspended, it means you're suspended until you're healthy enough to play. And then when you're healthy enough to play, you get suspended. Now it's saying the suspension will be served as if he's healthy to play right now.
Right now. Yeah.
I see your game. I see your game here. I like that.
I'm glad you like it.
I like it. I like it. Moving on. Anthony Davis suffered a left heel contusion in Detroit. It looked like an ankle injury late in the fourth quarter, and that loss, I was there for that. He was moving around gingerly. He stayed in the game and played. I think he scored about, like 37. He's leading the league in scoring. He's listed as questionable for today's game, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, against Memphis. He was pretty adamant, it seemed like, when Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times was asking LeBron James at LeBron's locker, which is right between, right next to Anthony Davis's locker. He was like, well, how do you think you're going to fare if Anthony Davis misses extended time? And he's trying to dance around it a little bit because Anthony Davis is right behind him. And Anthony Davis says, I ain't missing no time. Mm. They are so dependent on Anthony Davis. They're using him as a hub. I just mentioned he's leading the league in scoring. He's one of the best interior defenders that we've seen in the last decade plus. But how much of this injury, or just any injury for Anthony Davis, given his history, is a concern?
I was about to say, I mean, given his history, you can't really be surprised, right? You kind of know that he has been nursing certain injuries and managing them. That's what he said about this injury, that he's been managing it since the summer. And so you're not surprised given his history. But it's absolutely of a huge concern to the Lakers. I mean, if you're J.J. Redick, it's like, hey, I was already trying to do something, you know, with this team this season, a whole bunch of storylines and kind of distractions. And now him facing another, and Anthony Davis facing another injury so early in the season, especially when he's gotten to, when he's at this level of play right now, right? Leading the league and scoring. And like you said, they depend on him for so much. To me, though, they just can't afford to lose him for too long. Like it's really that simple to me. Like, yes, you can lose him for a couple of games. You get him rested. He comes back. He's managing it. But you just can't afford to lose him for too long. It'll start to get dicey, I feel like, if it's more than 4 or 5 games, and especially if this becomes a lingering issue. Again, he's been managing it since the summer, so you can almost expect for this to pop up maybe later in the season and him have to sit another few games to rest, again, barring no other injuries that happen in between that time. So it's just tough. I think it's tough to say.
I think there's more responsibility on Anthony Davis with the Lakers than there's been in any other season since he's been there. And we've been asking and waiting for, when is the day going to come when LeBron James is going to take this half step back? Anthony Davis takes the step forward. He becomes the hub on offense. He's already been the hub on defense. LeBron is trying to pick and choose his spots, especially because he's trying to play 82 games this year. He's made that a stated goal. Anthony Davis played 76 games, I believe, last year, which was the most games he's played in a season in his entire career. Plus the Olympics, you're wondering if a cumulative effect will take hold at this point here. But when he plays, he's a monster. And I don't know if we talk enough about Anthony Davis as on the floor. We keep asking for more, like someone, I think it was Dave McMenamin from ESPN, asked J.J. Redick, his former teammate, in the pregame press conference before we figured out anything about Anthony Davis being hurt. He said, what's the next step for Anthony Davis? And J.J. Redick, in his J.J. Redickness, said, you're always asking for more from Anthony Davis, which is true. We're always asking for more. Like, at what point will we say, you know what? This is the peak of the peak. I'm not sure if that actually is going to happen. Last thing before we take a break, Aaron Gordon will miss multiple weeks with a calf injury for the Denver Nuggets. When I look at that team, I look at Aaron Gordon as being maybe the most indispensable player outside of Nikola Jokic, because he can defend multiple positions. He's a low maintenance guy. He does not need the ball, but he's always makes himself available and open for some of those duck-ins for Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. I think this is a critical point for the Denver Nuggets. A calf injury is one of those things that scares me, because the calf is next to something that if you hurt it, you're going to be out for 12 months and everything's done. So I'm very curious, Ice, how the Denver Nuggets will fare without Aaron Gordon, considering they haven't fared that well with him.
Yeah. And too, you know, Jamal Murray is out right now. He's on concussion protocol. It's unclear how long he'll be out for a little bit. So you add that along with Gordon, along with the fact that the Nuggets are 4-3 and haven't looked very great so far. I think it's hugely concerning. I know when we were talking preseason, we chatted about the Nuggets and we had talked specifically about Michael Porter Jr. and how we felt like he was the player that needed to step up this season for the Nuggets, period, without any injuries, without anything. He needed to be the one to step up. I'm going to bring that back up again. I think this is a perfect time for him to step up. And then the other critical issue with the Nuggets is they already lack depth. And so you lose Aaron Gordon. You already don't have much coming off of the bench. Yes, there's an opportunity for, hey, some young guys to step up. But I think if you're them, you're figuring out who can step up. I think it's more of a Michael Porter Jr., but we've been saying that consistently in the preseason. I think they can expect better out of him. But this is definitely dangerous waters for them over this next stretch without Aaron Gordon. And however long that lasts, like you talked about, a few weeks could be 4, a few weeks could be 8. It's a huge difference.
No, huge difference. Look, so far they're 6th in offensive efficiency, 18th in defense, and then you're losing your best defender. Some of those minutes are going to go somewhere. They're going to play a little bit smaller. You might wind up playing Michael Porter Jr. at 4. He's almost 7 feet tall. He's the size of Kevin Durant. So you're going to play the Christian Browns, the Julian Strouders, the Peyton Watsons, the Hunter Tysons, who actually close games for them in ways that you would never expect to see a veteran laden team depend on young guys. And of course, you have Russell Westbrook there, who's had a couple of good games playing next to Nikola Jokic, but is a all-around wild card at this stage of his career. I think this is a critical time for a team that, in the Western Conference, 48 wins can put you in the play-in. Being without your best defender for a number of weeks can put you behind in such a way that you cannot necessarily make up ground. But when we come back, we're going to pause for a minute and pay some bills. We're going to go and look back at the 2019 draft class. Remember that draft class of Zion Williamson and Ja Morant? They got some other guys there who are doing real work. Welcome back to The Good Word with Ice. The 2019 draft, we're going to put that a little bit into focus because this year's draft stinks. Okay, next to like Zach Edey and a couple of guys and a couple of players here and there, this draft blows. Okay. 2019 was one of those drafts where you're like, okay, this is going to be historic. We all knew about Zion Williamson coming out of Duke. We all knew about Ja Morant. Then after that, we thought it was going to be a little bit of a drop-off. And inevitably, there's always going to be an all-star that comes out of nowhere. But first, Ice, I want to start with Zion. He's played in 5 of 8 games this year for the Pelicans, a team that's already got a litany of injuries to key players. Zion's injury is a hamstring and a quad. That limited him to 29 games in 22-23. He's day-to-day now. They actually left him at home. They told him not even to come to the arena the other night, according to head coach Willie Green. If Zion Williamson is on your team, this is something you're going to have to deal with for however long he plays. I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where we're like, you know what, Zion Williamson lost the weight. He looks like an Adonis, and now he's going to play 75 games, be healthy for the in-season tournament, be healthy for the playoffs, be healthy for everything. It's a matter of almost like Joel Embiid, but in a different way, where you're just going to have to pick and choose your spots. And unfortunately for him, I feel like it's going to be one of those things where, man, is he going to have a long career, long-ish career?
Partner, you hit it. That's literally my note here, was like, I wonder how much longer we'll actually be talking about him. You know, I think with just the way his body is structured, the way in which he plays, like putting pressure on the rim, getting down the floor, converting inside, like he does these things at such a high level. But it's all because of his physicality. It's all because of the pressure that he's putting on the quad, the calf, the knees, the ankles, et cetera. So I think that's actually the biggest question for him is like, how much longer is he going to play? And at some point, obviously, we've been talking about his weight and his body forever, but maybe we were talking about it before and saying, hey, his game could reach this level if his body got into the physique it's supposed to. Now we're talking about you making money. Now we're talking about the longevity of your career in terms of your body getting to where it needs to be. Like, it's two different kinds, two different types of conversations. And it's a tough conversation that we're having from a 2019 draft pick. Like, I don't think we should be having this now. I think he was young enough to get his body in shape years ago. At this point, it's almost... it's been a bit irresponsible, especially with, it's been a bit irresponsible. I think I feel safe to say that. And yes, obviously he's gone through injuries which have impacted his physique, which have impacted right. him getting into shape at times. So I understand that. I went through two ACLs and was out for a year. I understand what that means to your body. But at the same time, as you're coming back, that has to be your number one priority. Like, your body is literally what makes you money. It's a bit irresponsible that at this point, I think we're still talking about these issues because of his physique and not because of skill or, you know, a crazy play that happened or Draymond Green ran him to him randomly. Like, we're not talking about these things. We're talking about his body.
I think multiple things come up for me, Ice. And usually, I don't always follow the lead of what former players say. But when former players or guys directly in his shoes like Charles Barkley will come out, go out of his way to say, Zion's got to get himself into shape. Like, when I looked at Zion Williamson at Duke, I saw Charles Barkley as a remixed, evolutioned version. And Charles Barkley, you know, notoriously said, hey, when I came into the league, I was 300 pounds and Moses Malone made me lose weight until, you know, because I wasn't playing. And you're like, you fat and you lazy, all this other type of stuff. And then Charles Barkley became Charles Barkley, even though you would say Charles was a bigger dude. It never really prevented him from actually playing. It never really prevented Chuck from actually getting on the floor. We've had multiple seasons of Zion Williamson. I'm just going to go down this player chart. 24 games his rookie year. Remember, that was the COVID-shortened season of 2019-2020, where they only played 72 games. Remember, he did not play in the bubble. Next year, 61 games. 22, he missed all of that. Then 23, aforementioned, played 29 games. Was named an all-star. You know, that was the, you know what I mean? Like, all of that stuff that matters. 23-24, 70 games last year, but couldn't finish. This year, 5 out of 8 games. And here's the thing that jumps out to me, Ice, and it's a small sample size, so I'm very careful about this. Shooting 44% from the field. And when you're talking about a guy who's undersized but supposed to be, like, explosive off the bounce and getting that second jump, that's where you see decline. Granted, it's a 5-game sample size, so I'm not super tripping on it. But I do think it's something that bears watching, especially when you're on a team that has offensive weapons who aren't always on the floor. So you're not able to take the attention away from Zion Williamson. Add to the fact, Ice, you just said it. The pounding on the ankles and the knees and the quads on that hardwood. We say basketball is a non-contact sport. That hardwood does not give. That is not a pillow. That thing hurts. And every time you take a tumble or you take a spill or whatever it is, that's a price you're going to be paying later. And I wonder, especially because Zion hasn't developed a consistent outside game, if he's going to continue to play like this, that's going to put him in even more danger. Now, let's talk about a happier player. Can we do that, Ice? Can we talk about a happier player?
Someone happy and exciting and that jumps and twists and turns.
There we go. There we go, Ice. I'm talking about Ja Morant, right? This man did not one, but two switch hands, 360 moves in Brooklyn the other night. It's a game that they lost. But I think, Ice, from the standpoint of, A, we've missed that from Ja Morant. The shoulder surgery last year, the suspension of 25 games. You're talking about one of the most athletic players the NBA has seen come into the league in some time. You're talking about a mix of, you know, Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose, Allen Iverson, that exciting brand of basketball that's actually winning basketball. Like, his scoring is down a little bit, but his assists are up. His turnovers are also up, which I think is just a function of him playing again. But when you've got Desmond Bane scoring, Jaren Jackson scoring, Zach Edey being the surprise that he is, A, Memphis is going to be something to be reckoned with once they figure it out. They're 4-4 right now. But I just think in a world of three-pointers, I think it's just really cool to see somebody going to the bucket and dunking on folks, or at least looking like he's going to dunk on you, and then he turns his body in a reverse 360 and winds up on the other side of the rim.
It's like all just so much finesse. I saw a tweet the other day that said, you know, when it's all said and done, John Morant may have the best highlight tape we've ever seen in the NBA. And I think that is becoming very fair to say. You said we missed his game. Like, yeah, we just missed the excitement. You know, we just missed seeing somebody do something that we haven't seen anybody else do. I think that's what's so unique about Ja and his energy, but especially on the team that he's on and the young, you know, kind of energy that they have behind them. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just when you see all, I don't know, the content and you're watching the games, just such an easy team to root for almost, especially behind Ja. So I feel like he's just flourishing. I think he's flourishing. He's on the court. I agree with you about his turnovers. I think at times I've seen him play a bit too fast, but he has the ability, I believe, and the growth and maturity to manage that and to not still be out of control. I think he has the ability to manage that. And like you said, when you're coming back from being out for so long and injury, you just got a lot of ramped up energy. You know, you're just ready to unleash all the time. And so sometimes you're flipping the ball.
Look, the way that we talk about Anthony Edwards now, like America's darling, America's sweetheart, everything that Ant does is cool. That was the way we thought about Ja Morant until he started playing with guns. And was telling us that he was playing with guns. That was supposed to be, someone said it to me on Twitter the other day, and they were like, man, Ja Morant and Ant should be playing together on Christmas. They should, except you didn't know if you could trust Ja Morant when you were making these schedules. But now if you feel like you can trust Ja Morant to stay off of Instagram and keep everything at bay, yeah, the NBA should get behind that. Like that, like he has an excitement and a skill that is marketable, even though he's playing in Memphis and that's, you know, one of the smaller markets in the league. I still think that is something that the league, once it decides to trust him again, right? It's still very early in the process. Anything can happen when it comes to trusting folks, y'all. But so far, I want to see Ja Morant. He's still must-see TV for me. Now, Ice, you got the list of names. Mm-hmm. What player do you want to hit on next?
Yeah, I want to chat RJ Barrett. Okay. I am very happy for RJ Barrett. I'm trying to bring happiness today in case anybody can't tell. So I'm trying to be overly happy about things. But I'm very happy for RJ Barrett. The reason being is that I think anytime you have core players on your team who go down because of injury, and obviously you're still healthy and on the ball, you know that there is more going to be expected of you. And so I think with what he has shown us, averaging 26, almost 6 rebounds, almost 8 assists, and the players that are out for injury right now with him, I think he's showing us that he's ready to step up and be that. I know I saw in your notes, you said, like, did we think he could be this good? I think with the opportunity and the right pieces around him, yes. And I understand that when Quickley comes back, when Barnes comes back, his production will immediately go down, obviously. But it is great to see that with them out, he is able to still take care of that load and do it from an efficient perspective as well.
There's something to be said for being able to, even though high usage leads to lower efficiency for a lot of guys, where you wind up having to take a couple more shots a game because you wind up having a lot more defensive attention on you. The fact that you show that you don't scare, that shows your franchise something. I long believed, Ice, that there was a big drop-off after the first and second picks in that draft. RJ Barrett, I didn't think that he had that extra aggressiveness in him. I always thought that he was a very smooth offensive player. He had all the skills, but I didn't see him having that extra dog in him, lack of a better phrase, to be able to take the game. Like, he has the skills to take the game, but does he have the mentality and the mindset to take the game? That's why I asked the question, who thought he'd be this good? I did not, because there's a lot of guys who have the skills to take over a game, and the difference is all in mentality and consistency. Absolutely. And the fact that he's doing it, albeit on a losing team, the Toronto Raptors are not necessarily the Toronto Raptors that we've seen, you know, for the past decade or so. But him being there, he was not just some throw-in in that trade that netted them OG Anunoby. He was the main piece for that. And he was on a max contract for the Knicks. Now, granted, it's made the Knicks better adding OG Anunoby. It's a different archetype of a player, but I do think it has unlocked RJ Barrett in a different way where he doesn't have to be the third option. And it gives him the confidence to know that when those guys do come back, he'll be able to fit in a way that he won't have to take a back seat for those guys. They can all share in responsibility. The last one I want to talk about, and it's funny because there's Coby White there, who I really like. He's one of the value contracts in the league. Rui Hachimura, who's found a place in LA. But I want to touch on Darius Garland from the Cavs.
Yeah, and it's cool because story.
Yes, and large part because the Cavs are so weirdly built where you have two bigs and then two point guard size players in the backcourt. He said something that was really critical the other night after he scored 39 against the Milwaukee Bucks in a game where he was going back and forth with Damian Lillard. He said, my head is free. Confidence is super high. He's shooting 52 from the field, 45 from three. He played most of last season with a jaw wired shut. Remember that. Like, he was not his healthiest self. And you're playing next to Donovan Mitchell, who was going into free agency. So a lot of things were going to be, you know, tailored and geared a certain way. You got a new coach and a new system. He looks excellent so far. The numbers don't jump out at you. He's still averaging right around 20 points and 6 assists. But Ice, it just looks like he's fitting better in this offensive system with Kenny Atkinson. And the Cavs are undefeated. So clearly, he's got a lot to do with that.
I was going to say, clearly. But even looking at his shooting percentages right now, again, yeah, it's early in the season, but he's shooting 52% from the field. That's 6% higher than he's ever shot from the field in his career in 2022-23. Mm-hmm. He's also making over three threes a game right now. That's also a career best. But confidence, man, I preach that to my clients. We talk about media training or basketball training. Like, confidence is everything. To know that you're not second-guessing anything, you're not hesitating everything, you know exactly what you're supposed to do in the role in which you have. And he looks like he's playing with uber confidence. And I think that's why he's knocking down some shots.
Yeah, I think the fact that he's probably being empowered. It's really difficult as a coach to empower multiple players at the same time. Donovan Mitchell is empowered. You want Evan Mobley to be empowered to take more of an assertive role. And you want to have a confident Darius Garland. So far, it has worked and worked to perfection. The Cavs have not lost a game. Maybe they're going to be the Eastern Conference party crashers. We will see. We're going to take our last ad break and we'll be right back with the last word with Ice. Welcome back to The Good Word, Ice. Let's get into today's last word. I saw something really, I want to say heartwarming isn't the word, but it was really fascinating the other night. The Golden State Warriors were in Washington, D.C. on Monday night. Games were staggered in 15-minute intervals as part of the voting registration, voting initiative that the NBA was doing. See how well that actually took hold yesterday. But Jordan Poole and Draymond Green shared some moments on the floor. There was the, I don't know, did you see all of the moments, Ice?
All of the moments?
Okay. Yeah, so there was a moment where Jordan flared out and hit a deep three. And he pointed at Draymond Green, right?
Absolutely, saw that moment.
The next possession, Jordan got lost on a switch. Steph Curry hit a corner three. What does Draymond do? Point at him in kind. Bang, bang, right? So there was... I can't think of the rookie's name. His name's on it. I think it's Carrington, right? I think it's Carlton Carrington. They were at the foul line and he was being a little chippy with Draymond Green. So Jordan Poole grabbed him and pulled him away. Now, if anybody knows the consequences of said discussions with Mr. Green, it is Mr. Poole, right? He's like, hey man. You may not know his movies. We know his movies here, right? Right? There was another instance where Draymond had Jordan Poole in the post, and Jordan Poole, he was fighting him. He had the arm bar in the back or whatever it was, and a foul got called away from the ball, and Jordan kind of pushed him away. And next thing you know, before the play began, before the camera went away, you know what Draymond Green did? He kind of tapped him on the chest, like good job. Not to say that nature's healing, right? Not to say that is healing, but Draymond actually complimented Jordan Poole's play after the game, like unprompted. He didn't talk about their relationship, but he basically said, you know, Jordan's play, he has slowed down. He understands his role. Now he's not trying to prove anything. He's just being the talented player that he is. I don't know if you would have heard that from Draymond Green last year. You know what I mean? I don't know if you necessarily, I don't know if you would have heard that from him.
Yeah, I mean, so interesting because in one way, this is what's great about Draymond is that he's such a vet, you know, and he has such a basketball mind that he is able to give us that analysis and it be right on point and it be nice. And it's supposed to look like that because you're a vet, you know, this is someone that has played on your team. Like at one point, this was a little bro of yours, right? Mm-hmm. That you were hoping emerged to this role, maybe on your team until it got dicey, right? And so I do think that it's mature of Draymond. I think it was mature. I think it was nice. I think the funniest thing ever, though, was seeing Poole pull his teammate away from Draymond. I thought that was hilarious. Just, yeah, it was so many thoughts that went through my mind. Like, even if it wasn't unserious and it was serious, we all got the same idea as soon as it happened. Like, yeah, like you said, in case you haven't seen this movie, let's not.
Yeah, I mean, and look, Draymond also said about the Wizards. He said, look, they played hard. They competed hard. And the Warriors won the game. It never really seemed like it was in too much doubt. It wasn't a game where the Wizards led, but they kept competing. And Draymond complimented them on that. And subsequently, you got a guy like Jordan Poole, who's averaging 23 a game, leading the league in steals. Although, you know, steals aren't necessarily a function of great defense, but Jordan Poole does know how to get out into the passing lanes and defend. And he's averaging 5 assists. He's one of those tweeners at both positions. Not really a point, not really a two, but he's so talented and gifted at scoring and making creative plays. You have to put him out there. You have to give him the space and the real estate to be himself. He's shooting 45% from three right now. Again, small sample size. But I think we make our minds up about guys in the NBA. And once they get off of our radar, once they go to a way station like Washington, we never hear from them again. We don't think of them again. Some people thought Jordan Poole was going to lead the league in scoring last year with all the space and all the freedom, and it wasn't the case. He struggled. Yeah. But if you don't come back to him, you don't see the improved play. You don't see what the Wizards are trying to do by surrounding that team with young, energetic, tough players. Even though they're going to take their lumps, they're going to do a lot of losing this year because the Wizards always do a lot of losing. And hopefully for those two, because those two, like you said, Draymond was his vet before that situation happened. And maybe that situation happened because Draymond was his vet and you felt a level of comfort in chirping with the dude that you didn't think was going to cross the line of physicality, of beyond physicality. You know, we all saw it, and that's a pretty embarrassing thing to have happen, to then play the season and then to next year get traded and everything else. There's some resilience inside of Jordan Poole that I don't think we necessarily give him credit for, and now he's starting to reap some of the rewards, at least individually, and maybe, just maybe, nature is starting to heal. Or maybe maybe it ain't healing. Maybe it's just moving.
I think we're moving forward.
Not even moving forward. Just moving.
No, we're not moving forward today. You're right.
We're not moving forward today.
Yeah,
we're just moving. We're just moving. We're just here. And we brought this podcast to you. We hope that we gave you a reprieve from all of the other things that are going on, more pressing in everybody's life. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is Ice Young. Thanks to Ice for riding shotgun with us here on Wednesdays. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. This podcast is taking off Monday for Veterans Day. I'll be back on Wednesday with another episode of The Good Word. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. Give us all of your feedback, hopefully 5 stars. Until then, everybody be safe.